Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We have a poll question on our politics website. It's a free country today. The number one cause of arrest in New York City last year was low-level marijuana possession, more than 50,000 arrests. Would you continue to arrest at this rate? Legalize marijuana completely? Only arrest people for smoking in public, not for possession in private, or something else? Go register your response at itsafreecountry.org. And coming up after we speak with City Council Speaker Christine Quinn, we're going to do a segment on this. We're actually going to invite people who've been busted for simple possession in New York City to call in and talk about your experiences. And we will have a guest as well. That's coming up in a few minutes. But it is the state of time of the year when elected officials give their State of the Union, State of the City, State of whatever addresses. And yesterday, New York City Council Speaker Christine Quinn gave her State of the City address, seeking to balance, as she puts it, the big and the small, from balancing the budget to preventing unfair parking tickets. Speaker Quinn joins me now to talk about some of the problems facing the city and how the council hopes to solve them. Hey, Speaker Quinn, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks. Good morning.
So starting with the big problems, what's the biggest challenge facing the city? You know, we played a clip in the news of Kathy Black, the school's chancellor, and Lieutenant Governor Robert Duffy going around on whether layoffs of teachers will be required this year. Cuts in state budget, where you would start?
Well, I think the cuts in the state's budget, the impact that has on our budget, our overall budget, as the recession impacts are still very much alive in the city, all of that together, budget, that's really, I think, our biggest challenge right now. And the spillover effects of things like that as they relate to unemployment still being significant in the city and as they relate to budget cuts, making it harder for organizations that serve New Yorkers to keep functioning, that and the ripple effects, I think, are really the biggest issue for all of us.
But everybody's broke. The state is broke. The federal government is broke. Mayor Bloomberg says the city's broke. But then when the city has needs, we, you know, look up to the state and Washington and say, come on, you're being unfair to us.
Well, you know, we in the city are actually in a better place probably than any other city in the country. Because in the years prior to the recession, when we had extra revenues in our budgets, we didn't spend all of them. So in the first 3 years I was speaker, working with my colleagues and the mayor, we took $8 billion, prepaid future bills, and put money into a trust fund. That is puts us not in a great situation, but probably the best situation of any city in the country right now. And I'm very proud of that. Now, that said, I fully recognize Governor Cuomo has no choice but to make tough decisions and pass a budget that has cuts in it. All I'm asking is that New York City be not be cut worse than anywhere else. In aid to municipality, all other jurisdictions are getting their funding cut by 2%. We're getting $300 million, our total allocation, zeroed out. We'll take our fair share and not complain about it, but we don't want to take more than our fair share.
You said in the speech that you cannot support the mayor's plan to cut capital spending by 20%. What
right.
would that affect, and what do you propose instead?
You know, I can't support that because we are lucky to have such a robust capital plan in the city. It gives us, you know, great opportunities to build things, to maintain things. It also employs 50,000 New Yorkers. And the construction, you know, area or sector has been really hard hit by this recession. Cutbacks will cause us to have to lay off those construction workers or their companies to lay them off. We just can't do that right now. The mayor's goal by the cuts, it's not that he doesn't want the projects. He wants to lower the debt service that we have to pay every year because, of course, we borrow the money, float bonds for the capital. And he's right about that goal. I would get to it in a different way. Our capital budget's about $10 billion. We need to commit now to begin paying eventually a tenth of that, about $1 billion out of pocket. Pay as you go. You can do that not for building, you know, a new school or building a new library. You can do that for the things that are maintenance related, in my opinion. The things you can plan on, the new roofs, the new sanitation trucks, the water main upkeep. If we do that and pay that out of pocket, we have the potential to drive our debt service down significantly. If we had started this a decade ago, we would have $500 million less. $500 million less next year that we had to pay in debt service. And $500 million, that's half of the Department of Sanitation's annual budget. So we would be in a better place. We need to move in that direction, and that'll help us, not immediately, but the next time that we are in a down economy, that'll really loosen up money for us.
You brought up the 17,000 city contracts that are in the budget, and you said in the speech that holding contract spending flat could save the jobs of 1,700 teachers. What kinds of services are covered in those contracts?
You know, in these 17,000 contracts, everything is covered from, you know, small contracts with not-for-profits for services they deliver, but also huge contracts with computer consultants, security guards, professional development. You name it, the contracts run the gamut. And many of them are for services that are better done by contracting out. But if we're asking city workers to do more with less, if we're contemplating laying city workers off, then our outside consultants have to be asked to do more with less as well. Just if we held it flat, right, not even talked about making cuts because there's built-in annual increases, et cetera, that saves $100 million. That's not a solution to all our problems, but that's a solution to 1,700 teachers.
Are you saying, though, that we should drop some of the contracts, even though they're more cost-efficient than having city employees do the work, just to save the jobs of city employees?
That's ultimately the choice that we're going to have to make. Think about it. If you have a contract to do a lot of work with the city of New York and you have a built-in cost of living increase in that contract, as some contracts do, you really shouldn't be getting the COLA until the effects of the recession are passed on the city's budget. The same way workers are not getting big raises. Two, if everyone's still feeling the impacts of the recession, right? So if you're a company that has a contract with the city, particularly a significant one, that's a great thing for your business. And if the city went to you and said, let's renegotiate. For the next couple of years, we need to cut how much we're charging, we're paying you by 5, 10, 15%, whatever. I just don't believe these companies are going to walk away from contracts with the city of New York. They're just too important to their long-term business.
Do you agree with the mayor that the city can't afford to pay public employee pensions in the way that we have, including those $12,000 annual bonuses, as he calls them, to retired police and firefighters?
Well, let me set aside the issue of what the mayor refers to as bonuses, which actually called the money from the Vario Supplemental Fund. I said yesterday in my speech, and I believe that we do need to make significant changes in the areas of pensions and benefits, because ultimately the system we have now is not long-term sustainable. What needs to happen is the impacted stakeholders, the mayor, the unions, their representatives, they need to get around a table and they need to figure this out. And they need to find savings that will help us this year and that are also recurring. Clearly, the unions have been clear that they don't like all of the mayor's proposals. If they have different ones and better ones, we need to get those on the table because we need to get changes that can save us money.
New York City Council Speaker Christine Quinn, she gave her... Now, what's the speech actually called? I seem to remember it was called the State of the Council speech in the past.
No, we call it the State of the City.
You do now.
Yeah, maybe they called it that once, but we've called it the State of the City.
Okay. Council Speaker Christine Quinn, who talked about problems big and small in the city, and one of the one of the small problems that you mentioned is probably getting the most attention for the speech, and that is parking.
Right.
Now, as WNYC's Andrew Bernstein points out in the Transportation Nation blog that we have, more than 90% of people who work in Manhattan take mass transit, not their own cars. So why the attention to the problem of parking tickets issued to drivers while they're putting money in the meters?
Well, for a couple of reasons. I mean, we've been very aggressive on mass transit issues in the council, from big campaign last year to successfully save student metro cards to supporting congestion pricing for extra funding for the MTA and an array of other issues. But we in the council want to be responsive to the issues that New Yorkers call us about. And certainly mass transit is one of those, and we've done that. But we track every call and complaint and issue we get in the council through our CouncilStat program. And tickets, very, very high on the list. We want to respond to what New Yorkers are asking us to help them with, and unfair ticketing and parking challenges. Because even if you take your car, take the mass transit to work in Manhattan, if you live somewhere else and you have a car, you have to figure out what to do with it before you go to work. So this was an attempt to be responsive, and also, particularly as it relates to the ticket issue with muni meters, to try to eliminate one of those things that seems small, but you get a ticket. You parked your car, you walked to the muni meter. In those 30 seconds or 60 seconds, you're going to the muni meter. Technically, you haven't paid yet, but you have no other choice. You can't, like, ESP your money to the muni meter. Mm-hmm. There has to be some period of time. You get a ticket. It's enraging. And it's enraging because it just feels like government is trying to get you, not help you. So, and I think getting a change in that is also just good for the city's relationship with its constituents.
Some people have suggested this is to set the stage for a run for mayor by you. Talk about the constituents and distance yourself from the current administration that's sometimes seen as anti-car. Are you like Marty Markowitz, the Brooklyn Borough president, who mockingly rode a tricycle into a city council hearing?
There is only one Marty Markowitz in Brooklyn and the entirety of the world. So I would never be so bold as to say I'm anything like Marty Markowitz. He is a one of a kind, and I haven't ridden a tricycle in a very, very long time. I think what we're trying to do here is just be responsive to the needs of New Yorkers and have a balanced agenda. You know, we're passing legislation in a full stated meeting today that deals with bicyclists and getting more data out there about bicycle crashes and where there are problems for bike riders. That's an important group of New Yorkers. Drivers are an important group of New Yorkers.
I gather that you've met with Walmart now.
Yes.
Has your opinion changed about their coming to the city?
No. I did meet with Walmart, and it was a very professional meeting. It was a respectful meeting. I articulated in greater detail what my concerns and our objections are to them. They had responses on some of the things I raised, not all of them. We agreed to meet again when they'll come back with some more information. Nothing in the meeting changed my opinion. Nothing is impossible, but there will have to be some very significant corporate changes before my opinion changes. I'm not overly optimistic, but, you know, obviously never mm-hmm. say never.
Are there differences between Walmart and, say, Target, which does have some locations around the city? And I don't see people up in arms about their local Target. And, you know, I've read some things that say Walmart actually pays a little better.
There are differences. One of my biggest concerns or fears about Walmart coming to New York is the impact it would have on the small businesses around the store, wherever that might be.
More than other box stores?
Yeah. The data shows that Walmart has a much more destructive impact on surrounding small businesses than any of the other so-called big box stores. I think it's in part because they're such an enormous corporation. They drive their prices so low, lower than the others. They have, you know, kind of every product you can think of, which although the others have a lot, it's not nearly as comprehensive. Those two things and other things combined really make it impossible for the mom and pop to survive.
And you said in your speech that city council gets more calls about affordable housing
than anything else, like significantly more.
So do you have new proposals for solving the problem?
We do. I mean, one of the things we get a lot of housing calls about is you guys are saying all the time you're making this affordable housing. How do I get an apartment? And right now, the process is so out of date, it's absurd. A New Yorker has to identify where there's affordable housing being developed, send the building developer a postcard, each building developer a separate one. They're going to mail you paperwork. You're going to fill it out. You're going to mail it back. It's going to be held, all of the applications, you know, kind of a vault or safe somewhere. Then they're going to get put in a big sack, mixed up, dumped on the floor, and they're going to pull 5, 10, 100, however many units are out of those applications. And that's how you get an apartment. I mean, that's beyond not 21st century. So we've worked with HPD, and we will soon launch an online housing application for all of the housing that HPD is developing and overseeing. You put your data in. You say which building, you say if you're interested in other buildings, if so, in what neighborhoods or what borough. You can check your application online. You can update it with just a push of a button and apply for different buildings.
People can do that now?
Not yet. It'll be we announced it yesterday, and it'll be up and running soon, and we'll make sure we get it out to folks as soon as they can do that. The other thing, Brian, that's good about this as well as being more efficient, we're now going to have an ability to track how many New Yorkers are applying. What borough has the biggest demands? What neighborhood has the biggest demand? That's going to help us plan in the future more strategically, as well as help New Yorkers make it easier for them to get the apartments that are out there. Let me just mention another thing on housing that we are doing. You know, it's great anytime we can develop more affordable housing. But we do that while at the same time programs like Mitchell-AMA and Section 8 in different buildings are expiring, right? Because they only have guaranteed affordability, some of them, for 20 to 30 years. We have clocks that track, you know, everything from how many days left the mayor has in office to how many days until the Nathan's hot dog eating contest. Mm-hmm. We have no system that tracks when affordable housing is expiring. So working with the Furman Center at NYU, we are going to launch a Red Alert system. It's going to be a database that has every affordable housing unit listed, what program created it, and when it expires. If you know early, you're much more successful, like we were in my district in the West Village houses, at working with the tenants and the owners, finding a way to keep the program affordable. If you're running around at the last minute, you're almost always unsuccessful.
That's great. Well, when those several projects that you mentioned go online, we'd love to do a segment, kind of a demonstration.
Oh, cool.
On
yeah,
the air
definitely.
Of how they work. So,
oh, great.
Christine Quinn, New York City Council Speaker, she gave her State of the City address yesterday. Now, our next segment coming right up is on a report that low-level marijuana arrests are up in New York City by 70% since 2005 to over 50,000 last year. Do you have a problem with this at the policy level? How does that compare to parking tickets as an over-policing issue?
Well, I can't tell you exactly how that compares to parking tickets number to number. I just don't have that data. You know, obviously the issue of is policing more aggressive in some neighborhoods than others, or some folks targeted more than others, that's something we've looked at a lot, you know, in the council. It's part of why we've passed legislation around trying to add greater transparency in the police department around different data. So I think, you know, they're fair questions to ask. I just don't know how the numbers break down enough, Brian, to really tell you whether I think there's a problem in particular areas or compared to something like, you know, parking violations or other quality of life issues.
All right. We'll have to leave it there. And we're going to go on and talk about that marijuana bust question next. We've been speaking with New York City Council Speaker Christine Quinn. Thanks always.
Thank you. Bye.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Marijuana arrests in New York City next.